Grab your bat microphone. It's time to start the show.
Welcome to the Bat Pod, a Batman comic book discussion podcast. On today's show, we'll be discussing Batman 107, Batman Catwoman number 4, and Joker number 2.
Fierce like Damien. Grab your headphones, listen up. You know you love it. Drop the facade. Like the Dark Knight Detective, they've got some perspective. They're a pure crime-fighting collective. It's the Bat Pod.
Welcome to episode 73. I'm your host, Bill Beer, and joining me tonight, the guy who put Dawson into Dawson's Creek, Sean Ross.
Unlike Dawson, I have a forehead. I'm not a five head. So, yeah, I'm a Pacey man. I'm not a Dawson man. We talked about this.
My bad there. You heard it right here life. First. You heard it right here. So we have a good show for you again. Some Batman, some Batcat, and some Joker, or Jim Gordon, which I like to point that out.
Yeah, more
not
accurately.
A lot of
yeah.
Joker. And we have a top three, and it's our top three Batman civilian outlaws. That should be a fun conversation. Let's go ahead and head to the books.
The Batpod is a spoiler podcast. Please read the comics we're reviewing so you can enjoy the show.
Our first book tonight is Batman 107, The Cowardly Lot, Part 2. Your writer, James Tynion IV. Artist, Jorge Jimenez. Colors, Tamu Mori. Letter, Clayton Cowles. Cover, Jimenez, Mori. Variant covers, Francisco Matina and Ricardo Federici. Associate editor, Dave Welgoss. And editor, Ben Abernathy. In this issue, Batman breaks into the mayor's mansion to investigate the Scarecrow, but is interrupted by a new commissioner, Rene Montoya. But he makes a getaway using a smoke bomb. In Electric Town, a young delirious man calling himself Stabbo is running through the city with a knife and is taken out by Batman's new sidekick, Harley Quinn. Harley gets into trouble when she assaults a cop and is rescued by the Ghostmaker while being watched by the mysterious Gardener. Back at Clock Tower, Oracle tells Batman she is working on several new bat signals that will be placed all around the city. Oracle tells Batman the Insanity Collective has a base camp in the abandoned Mid-City Mall. Simon Saint is notified he is invited to the new A-Day Memorial honoring guard Sean Mahoney. And the Scarecrow asks if he is ready for the next phase, with Gotham citizens dying, or is he too afraid to save Gotham? And her issue ends with a hipster arriving at the Insanity Collective's door saying, "My name's Match. Tell your master ways. I want in." So, we start off with this issue. We're back in a flash forward. We're back in a flash forward where we see the Scarecrow, the new Scarecrow, and what we think is Batman. And it's only in one page, one full page. And the thing that I got out of this particular page here is fear. Fear and memory, he says, they're intertwined. And if you think about it, that makes perfect sense, because your fear, you remember your fear. When you have a fear of something and, you know, it happens again, it's in your memory. So he's trying to do that to Batman. He's trying to create fear, or he says clarity. It doesn't look like there's much happening on this one page, but there really is. It really is a lot happening, and I like Bruce's dialogue where he starts to, you know, kind of succumb to the fear in the words. The dialogue gets kind of, you know, italics and that sort of thing. So what did you think of this first page here?
It is so powerful. It's the image, the way Jorge Jimenez is just on fire in this book. And Tomu Mori's colors might be the MVP. I don't think I've ever seen a book where the colors have done as much of the storytelling, or if I have, it's lost to memory. But the page, the eyes, Bruce's eyes are just open, wide open, pupils dilated with fear. And then the Scarecrow, the straw hat looking down, just makes him so much more intimidating. And usually Scarecrow is this thin, not physically intimidating figure at all. And the way they're drawing him is much more, at least the suit he's wearing looks bulkier. And, you know, he may not be bulkier underneath it, but the suit looks bulkier. And it's just a really fear-inducing image. I mean, a lot of dark greens, like sort of fluorescent hospital lights. All the signs on the floor are like caution, restricted area. I mean, it feels like the opening of a Saw movie, right? Like it just...
Oh,
it
absolutely. Really, yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's what they're going for. So it's a great way to open the issue. It's a great way to punctuate it because you're right. We're not going to come back to it. We're going to, you know, we're going to get the story as Bruce is remembering it as Batman. And I love it. I mean, I just think it's establishing that... I said this on the last episode. Jonathan Crane for me was played out. The Scarecrow was really played out. I didn't see him as a super threatening character anymore, and there's just been too many stories, and he didn't really have a physical component, and it's like Batman's had fear toxin so many times that he should be immune to it by this point. And I like that Tynan and Jimenez are ramping him up and bringing him back and showing really what a terrifying villain he is. So I thought it was a great way to open the issue, and just the art is so good in this book that it's, I mean, I want it collected in like a glossy hardcover.
Oh yeah. The art is just fabulous, and that reminds you, you know, they're in this dark place with this green light hanging, and you can imagine it swinging back and forth as he's injecting Bruce with his little syringes or something, because you see him inject it in the neck. So yeah, it is a real terrifying huge page panel there. So the other thing that I really like, you know, we see Batman breaking into the Mayor Nakano's house or mansion or whatever you want to call it. But we get, you know, little news panels, and it kind of brings you up to date of what's been going on in the city, what's been going on in Gotham. We see the news of what happened at the end of last issue. Now, I wasn't 100% sure of what happened, but after rereading it and going through it, it's a scare tactic. And Batman finds this out, that this is just a Scarecrow. There's no fear residue. There's nothing in here except just the Scarecrow. In the city from, you know, the Arkham A-Day and the Joker War and Bane, the city is in so much fear. And now that the Scarecrow is a threat, they're going and buying gas masks. They're, you know, selling out of gas masks in stores and that sort of thing. And I really like, as you said, the Scarecrow is being revamped here.
Mm-hmm.
There hasn't been a lot of new stories that does a lot for the Scarecrow's character. This is so interesting. Batman's even shocked. We got a Scarecrow here. It was placed in his mansion. There's no, whoever did it, there was no cameras on in the areas where they put in, they knew where the cameras were and everything. So I am super excited about the direction that this is going for Scarecrow, at least.
Yeah, and the thing that Tynan is doing brilliantly is these news inserts are a way to catch people up on the book, right? Every issue is somebody's first issue. It's a nice little bit way to get exposition across without it feeling clunky. But it also does more than that, because it shows the ramping up of the fear in the city. Like they're talking about, you know, financially, can Gotham handle another supervillain attack? And you've got other villains like this Master Waze from the Insanity Collective saying this is all a hoax. They're just trying to get you scared, which is not untrue. And then you cut to that gas mask piece, and then you cut to the guy saying, the newscaster saying, you know, violence has broken out in another grocery store in the Narrows, or people trying to stock up on supplies. And look, he's doing it delicately because it would be in poor taste not to do it delicately. But Tynan is definitely hitting on COVID era fear, right? The toilet paper shortage. And, you know, I remember, you know, when the governor in my state announced that everything was closing, I ran to the grocery store just like everybody else did. And it was packed, and, you know, people had carts full of food that they probably wouldn't normally buy or eat. And, you know, and it just, it's a recent enough event, and it's a recent and primal enough fear that it helps add a layer to this issue without being indelicate or in poor taste. It helps add a layer to this issue of like, you need to be afraid. Batman is afraid. You need to be afraid. Gotham is afraid. And I think it's so effective. I mean, again, everything is clicking in this book. The colors, the writing, the art, it's phenomenal. And I think it adds even an extra layer when Batman's talking to Oracle and he says, you know, there's no fear toxin on this, you know, effigy, basically, this hanging scarecrow in Nakano's mayoral mansion. He's like, Crane is basically saying to us, I don't need my old tricks. Like, I can put you all in paralyzing fear without any artificial sweeteners, basically. You know, I don't need any of that. I can do it on my own. So that for me is, again, really taking Scarecrow in an interesting direction. It makes sense that Gotham would have PTSD after the Joker War and that somebody would take advantage of it. So it's really well done. And then I loved the reappearance of Renee Montoya. She is one of my all-time favorite characters, both from the animated series, from Gotham Central, which is one of the best books, Bat books of all time. What are your thoughts on her coming back and as commissioner?
I loved it. I was kind of shocked to see her because we didn't really know who commissioner was going to be or who was going to be appointed commissioner. I think this was a great pick. You know, Nakano being a former police officer and that sort of thing, she shows up and is like, she's not super friendly to Batman. She's like, no. And he isn't either. He's like, he doesn't even care that she's there at first.
He basically tries to ignore her, but he does. He pokes at her because she pulls a gun on him. Everybody's, you know, aiming guns at him. And she's like, look, I've known Chris Nakano since I was a beat cop. He may have harsh opinions about you, but he's a good man. She's like, I'm arresting you. You know, stay still. And she says, if you don't leave now. Oh, no, she says, if you don't leave now, I'm going to arrest you. So she does give him a chance. She does remember enough. And then he says to her, someone's trying to put Nakano in a corner, make him afraid. Don't forget how to ask the questions that need asking. And I flipped out at this bit of dialogue because one of my all-time favorite stories is from 52, which it was the weekly one-year book between Infinite Crisis and the one-year later, you know, era back in like 2005, 2006. Right. And Renee Montoya's entire arc in that book is she goes from down on her luck, cop, ex-cop, alcoholic, to teaming up with Vic Sage, the Question, who is dying of cancer. And then she adopts his identity. And I love her as the Question. And we saw her as the Question recently in the Lois Lane miniseries by Greg Rucka. So, you know, in continuity, she is either still the Question or has very, very recently been the Question. So Batman poking at that publicly is really interesting. Are you a fan of her in that role?
Yeah. Yeah, I like that series. I liked her becoming the Question. I do like the original Question also.
Me too.
And it's interesting that he picked her, and, you know, that made her really angry when he was poking about, you know,
yes,
the Question.
Did.
And it's like, yeah, she basically flipped out, and he's like, okay, time to leave. He says, I poked the bear long enough.
Yeah.
Time to leave, and he throws a little flash smoke bomb type of thing and is gone. So
it's another example of Tynan being additive, right? Of new characters, returning characters in interesting roles, and then, you know, Renee Montoya coming back to the Bat books. How long has that been?
Yeah,
you know,
it's been a while.
Really long time.
Yeah.
So to have her back in and have her as commissioner is awesome. I love it.
I do love Commissioner Gordon as the commissioner, but this is a surprise, I do have to say. I don't know. I think I was expecting somebody that was like a no name.
Me too.
Becoming, you know, appointed commissioner. I wasn't expecting somebody I was familiar with. So I did really enjoy seeing that. And our next bunch of scenes, we shift to Electric Town and some guy wielding a knife that's a little crazy. I mean, he's running through the streets. He's already stabbed a couple people. Talking about the concrete jungle and jungles underground and the vines are going to get you and that sort of thing. And who shows up but Batman's sidekick, Harley Quinn. I love that she announces that.
It really kills me. It cracks me up. My hope is she has a piece of toast in her pocket with a bat symbol on it.
That would be awesome if she would have took a bite of a piece of bat symbol toast. That would be good. So she takes out the guy with her bat, and she recognizes the guy as Benji Fisk, who had been in Arkham. And when he's on his meds, he's kind of a sweet guy. But he calls himself Stabbo, and she's
Stabbo.
Like, yeah, and she's like, oh, hon, you're not too good at naming things, are you? Tynan just has her perfect.
Yeah, yeah, he does. And he makes her so sweet, too, because she's like, I recognize you, Benji Fink. And yep. Then she goes, oh, you're just not on your meds. And it's so sweet because she's like, he's just somebody who needs help. He's you know, mentally imbalanced.
Right.
He's not somebody who would normally be a criminal. And she gets that in a way that the cops don't. And I don't blame the cops in this scene. The guy has just stabbed a bunch of people. I'd have my gun drawn on him too.
Right.
But she has that layer of having been on the other side of things. And I think that's a really cool addition to her character, which again, you know, we've said this a bunch, never been a fan of hers, but Tynan and then Stephanie Phillips are making me a fan of her. So I loved that moment. And, you know, she's still Harley. She still smacks the cop and, you know, and then goes, oops.
Yeah. Oops. All nerds, she says. But yeah, it's Harley Quinn. I mean, you can't change the character. And of course, Ghostface shows up. Is that, that's what she calls the ghost maker. Oh, yeah. She's like, Batman was busy and I was bored.
I can't wait to see the two of them together because, man. So you said in your overview that the gardener shows up. So there's this African-American woman. She's in a really cool red suit. She looks like Janelle Monáe for anybody who likes Janelle Monáe, you know, who I love. And I was like, oh, this is great. I'm not familiar with her. Has she appeared before?
No.
How do you know she's the gardener?
It was announced. Tynan announced one of his new characters that shows up in this issue was the gardener. And there's two dog-like, they look like dogs, but they're made out of flowers or grass or vines or whatever.
Yeah.
But this whole scene is set up, even with, you know, Stabbo talking about vines and things underneath the city. Yeah. It's like pointing right to Poison Ivy.
Yep.
You know, if you read it and don't think about it too much, you would totally miss it, but it's totally pointing. And I loved him putting little pieces in, you know, things that are going to show up later. I have no idea who this gardener person is. That's what he called her. James Tynan, in an interview, he called her the gardener. So I don't know what she's gardening over, but she comments that Harley Quinn is back in Gotham.
And she's talking to somebody named Rex. So there's another character we don't know. But I'm excited for it, too, because one of the things that is happening in the Bat universe right now is they're making it a much more cohesive universe. They're really, you don't have to collect all the books, but if you do, you get a bigger snapshot and a bigger tapestry. Now, one of the things that is interesting is we covered Gotham Urban Legends number one, and there's the Harley Quinn Poison Ivy story in there where Harley's in her apartment and she's flashing back to Poison Ivy and she's thinking to herself, I need to be patient. You know, Ivy will come back to me. And then if you're not reading the Catwoman book, and I know that's probably a less, you know, maybe a lower selling bat book at times for some people, it's phenomenal right now. Rom V is writing it and Fernando Blanco is drawing it. And it is unbelievable art. It reminds me, Catwoman is a book I only collect depending on the creative team. I love Selina as a character, but if I don't like the creative team, it's not that she's not enough of a draw to get me. So I definitely collected during like the Darwin Cook, Ed Brubaker year, right? Like that was amazing. And I bought the Joelle Jones, you know, relaunch when it came out. And then, so when Rom V took over, I was like, oh, I like Rom V. I've seen, you know, some of what he wrote, Justice League Dark was good. I'll check out an issue or two. Mm-hmm. And I'll be honest with you, the Fernando Blanco art is what kept me coming back. And then Rom V's story has captured me. But her arc right now is that Ivy has been kidnapped and is being basically used by a pharmaceutical company to produce toxins, produce drugs. And Catwoman is going in to rescue her. So you don't need to know that at all for this Bat book it's not bringing anything. If you haven't read it, it's totally fine. But if you have read it, it does just round out Gotham even a little bit more. So I think that's so cool. I love when books have shared continuity but aren't overly dependent on it. I just think it makes for a richer world.
Absolutely. I have the two issues. I haven't read them yet, But that does sound interesting. I am definitely going to read those. But as we get back to this book, we switch to the Clock Tower and Oracle, who it's a big deal for me personally that Oracle is back. I debate whether, you know, I like her better as Oracle or Batgirl, and I really think I like her better in this Oracle role.
Yeah.
Than I do the Batgirl role. I mean, she is so well written in this book. I just love the feeling of her being back, Alfred not being around. She takes that role. I didn't see that coming, but I really enjoy that. And, you know, she digs into what's been going on with the Insanity Collective. And also it mentions, you know, Batman did some investigating. He went to Arkham and looked at the security footage, because Jonathan Crane supposedly died.
Mm-hmm.
He figured out that it was a lookalike. He went to the morgue and it was a prosthetics on a body double. So Jonathan Crane has been missing for a little bit. It wasn't something that he just, you know, he faked his death and got out. And they're saying, do you think Scarecrow was behind the A-Day attack and not the Joker? What is your feeling about that? Do you think the Scarecrow was behind this A-Day attack to make it look like the Joker?
It would make total sense, because the Joker venom that was used was not the normal Joker venom. It didn't make people laugh. They call attention to that. Mm-hmm. They say that because that part was missing, people didn't know it was coming and didn't know to flee.
Right.
And then there's a moment in a book we're going to cover in a little bit, Joker number 2, where Joker is talking about the A-Day attack, and he says the attack instead of my attack.
Yeah.
And so I definitely don't think the Joker did it. I don't know that Crane did it, but it would make a lot of sense if he did to set up this arc. So yeah, I think it's a nice little mystery. It's not a big one, but I like it. And I like that it's something that Oracle and Batman are looking into.
Yeah, absolutely. And she gets some, she does a little talking. I heard somebody said that this issue is a little wordy. I think there's a lot of, you know, dialogue in these couple scenes, but you really need all of it to explain.
Yeah.
Because she is delved into the Insanity Collective, and she's found where she thinks they are, and she makes the suggestion that Batman should go, like, undercover.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, are you ready to go unseen? So
I don't think there's any wasted dialogue here.
No.
I think I could see if you just visually scan the book, you know, for a 2021 book, there's a lot of word balloons. I mean,
right.
Chris Claremont would look at it and be like, oh, there's barely any dialogue. But, you know, it's definitely got more, but it's also just a more robust issue. Like, a lot happens. I mean, that's the thing that I'm really appreciating in this line right now, is that they're, you know, look, the books aren't cheap, right?
No.
And they're saying, hey, we know we're charging a little bit more, even though we're, you know, per page we're charging less because we're giving you more page count, but we're also going to give you more story. We're going to give you a denser book. We're going to give you a denser experience. And I'm really here for that. And I also, it's world building, it's character building. I mean, Barbara's book doesn't exist anymore, right? There's no more Batgirl book. So the only place we're getting Batgirl or Oracle is in the Bat books now. And so Tynan's not shying away from, oh, she's basically the secondary character in this book. You know, she is a main character. So she's going to get a lot of real estate. We're going to hear what she has to think, because she's brilliant. And she's going to be, she's no one's sidekick, right? She's not a Robin. She is her own person, her own character. And Batman is taking advice from her. And I think that's really important for two reasons. One, it reminds people what a force Barbara Gordon is. And two, it shows real growth in Batman. And it's not lampshading it. He's listening to Oracle and he's hearing what she says. And he's not going like, I work alone. He's got Ghostmaker as a roommate. He's involving him. He actually brought Harley in, even though normally he would have pushed her away. I just think this is a newer, friendlier, like more family-oriented Batman. And I think it's an awesome change. And it's being done really subtly. So I love her role in this, and I wouldn't change a thing. I don't think it's a wordy book. I think it's a dense book, and it demands your attention.
Yeah, I agree. And You know, he trusts Oracle. He trusts Barbara Gordon. So that's a big thing. It's not like it's a new character that was brought in. So I really enjoy their interaction, you know, when she's talking in his ear or whatever, and she's like, the only way to get these guys is to join them.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see his reaction to that soon, but we see Simon Sane again, and, you know, it looks like last issue, Mayor Nakano's like, yeah, there's no way we're going to do this magistrate thing. But then they send Simon Sane an invitation to the groundbreaking for A-Day, and it sounds like they're headed in the direction of, you know, doesn't know what else to do about this scarecrow thing. The fear in the city is at the high. So I think they're going in the direction of the magistrate is coming. You know, they're going to be honoring this guard who was a hero, Sean Maloney.
I do think you're right. I mean, I think Future State basically said, like, hey, there's this looming threat, and now they're following up on it right away. And I'm excited for it. I didn't love Future State. I mean, neither of us did, right?
No.
Dark Detective was good, but as a whole, and the Harley Quinn book was good, but as a whole, it wasn't necessarily, I think, a success. But I'm good with the concepts in Tynan's hands. I'm good with the concepts in Mariko Tamaki's hands over in Detective. And so, and Simon Saint, one, he looks like Jonathan Crane. That can't be accidental.
He does.
You know, and two, he is clearly mesmerized by the new Scarecrow. He's just under his thrall. So I think that's a really cool element that if you go back and read the Harley Quinn Future State books, Jonathan Crane is very present and is seemingly working for the magistrate. Maybe there's a clue that it was more than just that. So I like it. I like the callback. It makes Future State feel more valuable and more relevant than it did on its own. You know, and I think it's a nice little cutaway before we get to the best image in the book, the final page. What did you call him in your summary? Did you call him a hipster?
A hipster. Yeah.
I do love that it's not Matches Malone. It's Match.
Yeah.
He looks like Commissioner Gordon. He looks
he
like
does.
A young Commissioner
Gordon. He looks
Gordon.
Like Commissioner Gordon with a little white in his hair above his ears.
Uh-huh.
And the mustache. But he's got this jacket. He's got a, I think it has a tie. Is he wearing a tie?
It's an interesting outfit.
Yeah. And he's got these light up zipper.
Uh-huh.
And then these circles that light up, and his hair is standing all spiky, and he calls himself Match, and I said, he looks like some kind of old hipster, because obviously he's not young, but interesting.
It's crazy, man. He looks like the guy, if you went to he looks like 1995 rave in a warehouse, like the old guy in the corner dancing by himself that everybody's a little creeped out by and kind of stays away from.
Yeah. So that'll be very interesting to see where that goes, because he just walks up and says, hey, I'm looking for the Sanity Collective. He's not being secretive about it or anything.
Nope.
I love to see this is a new version of Matches, I assume. So
I think it's great, man. And I just look, this issue for some people might feel like a middle issue in an arc because it's really all about advancing the story. But it does it so well that I don't feel like it. Sometimes people will say, oh, it's a middle issue in an arc, meaning it's sort of skippable or wasted or something. I don't think it's that at all. I think it's absolutely well-written, beautifully drawn, amazingly colored. And again, just I'm so excited for this book. And then, you know, that's not even the end of the story because we get a backup and I can't wait to hear you. I cannot wait to hear you give a summary for the backup, Bill.
The backup. It's a very brief summary. I know you're excited about this one. You messaged me that you're excited about it. So I will get right into it. Our backup is with the Ghostmaker. And in this particular backup, they're on the ghost stream where the Ghostmaker has some rest and relaxation. And I guess he got a little bored, so he wants to jetson off to Devil Skull Island, which it's just crazy. Everything is ramped up in this backup, and there's some villains there that are expecting him. Madame Midas, the Instigator, Razorline, Kid Kuwait, Brainstorm, and the leader, Madame Midas announces that the Ghostmaker is coming to Devil's Skull Island now. It's just crazy. And then once the Ghostmaker arrived, he is attacked by none other than a few tigers with laser eyes. To be continued. But it's crazy.
It's so good. It's so good. I can't even get over how much fun this is. And then the art is amazing. I mean, it is just so fun. It's so beautifully drawn, but it's so stylized. I mean, it looks like a side crawler 2D fighting game from the early 90s, right? Like the art is super anime, like Jeff Matsuda, you know, Campbell. I mean, it's got all of the like early Image boys. So it's written by James Tynion. It's drawn by Ricardo Lopez Ortiz, colored by Tomomori, lettered by Clayton Cowles, edited by Ben Abernathy and Dave Welgoss. Ricardo Lopez Ortiz, it draws this book that it is so much fun. The only way I could describe this is it's like a bat book set in the Pokemon universe where Team Rocket are the good guys and the bad guys. Like he is basically Jesse from Team Rocket and Madame Midas is the woman from Team Rocket. It's so, and, you know, and there's even like Meowth is in there. It is so ridiculously awesomely over the top. Yes. That I cannot wait for more for this.
That's what I was going to say. All these villains are like over the top. You have a guy that looks like an alligator and they have little blurbs on each of them. Madame Midas is, it says the richest woman on earth. And she just, the art has her shoulder pads and her costume overdone. They're really high. And then the instigator is this magically transform martial artist and terrorist that looks like an alligator. Then this razor line, he's an unspeakable otherworldly horror.
I mean, it's just great. And the instigator has a septum ring. I mean, he's Killer Croc with karate. It's unbelievable. And then Kid Kawaii is awesome. There's this little anime kid and it says Pharaoh Fluid Assassination Robot.
What does that mean?
I don't even care. I don't care what it means because it's just amazing. And Madame Midas, they're all on her evil Skull Island, right? I mean, this is right out of Venture Brothers or Austin Powers. And she says to them, and the lettering is so great because it's so manga. She says, "The Ghostmaker is coming to Devil Skull Island now." And they're like, "Are you insane?" Huh? And it gets like video game cutscene. You know, they all like rush at her and she's like, "Calm down. We're going to take him together." And he's communicating with his ghost ship. And the thing that kills me about that is the image of his ghost ship is one of the ghosts from Pac-Man.
Oh, yeah.
It's so good. Bill, you did skip over the lead, though. You buried the lead.
Did I?
And I have to say, yeah, you did. Yeah. And you're making me do it, but I'm going to do it. I read the backup and I immediately texted you and I said, "Hey, you're the one summarizing Batman 107, right?" And you're like, "Yep." And I go, "Oh, awesome. Because I can't wait to see if you're going to use the term Devil's Three-Way in your summary of the Ghostmaker story." Because that story opens on the ghost stream on his ship with a very burly man and a woman and the Ghostmaker all in bed together. And he's getting up to get dressed post-coitally because he says, and even says to them, "You'll be pleased to know that I solved 6 crimes in the last 2 hours of carnal bliss." He actually says, "I just needed to like get some energy out. I was a little bored. I needed some physicality." He says this to his ghost stream. His friend is the AI. And he says he solved 6 crimes while they're together in bed. But it is so awesome. We have a mainstream bat book. We have the anchor book of the DC universe. And it features a story with a bisexual lead character who is not subtextually bisexual, who is not hinted to be bisexual, but Tynion just calls his shot and puts him in bed with a man and a woman on the first page of his first solo story. I could not be more pleased about this backup between Madame Midas, between all the anime influences, between the crazy over-the-topness of the Ghostmaker. We have surmised that they might do a heel turn with him at some point and make him a villain. I am now praying to the comic gods that they do not do this, but that they instead lean into him as this over-the-top 90s anime import cartoon hero with everything that comes with it. I love this so much. Are you just so excited for this?
Yeah, I enjoyed this. I did. I can't wait to see where it goes. But I have a big question, and maybe you can answer this. When did they have time to cook a turkey? That's a turkey.
Ghostmaker can do anything.
I mean, he had time to solve 6 crimes. I guess he ran out real quick.
Do anything.
Put a turkey in the oven.
Most people would just be in the carnal bliss, or would just be solving crimes, or would just be making a turkey. Ghostmaker does them all at once.
There you go. So yeah, that was your issue. Any final thoughts?
It's so good. Where in the world do you get a comic book that has the heaviness of the bat side of the story with the city gripped in fear and then the lightness of the Ghostmaker story? I mean, Tynan is, I think he's the best writer in comics right now. And I don't think it's even close. So buy this damn book. It's amazing.
I have to agree. It is amazing. Batman is amazing right now. I look forward to every issue coming out. Let's go ahead and we're going to head to our top 3.
The Batmobile. Let's go. Atomic batteries to power. Turbines to speed.
You're ready to move up.
Welcome to Top 3. And today on Top 3, we have Top 3 Batman Civilian Allies. And as always, Sean, you get to go first. Who's your number 3?
So I'm super excited for this topic because I think as much as Batman is often the Dark Knight, you know, of vengeance and I work alone, I like Batman best when he acknowledges that, in fact, he does not work alone, but has a giant community of support. And so for my first choice, I'm going to start a little smaller and I'm going to go with Harold, who was the, for lack of a better term, maybe bat mechanic for a number of years. Mm-hmm. Now, Harold is a physically deformed man. I don't know the exact term. He's a hunchback. I don't know. That's probably not appropriate to say anymore, but unfortunately, I don't know the exact term for his condition. I don't know that they ever define it. But Harold first appears in The Question, number 33, in December 1989, which was written by the great, late, great Denny O'Neill and drawn by Dennis Cohen and Rick Magyar. He is perceived as a monster by people, but he's not. He's this very gentle soul. And then he weirdly ends up in a Batman comic, and he first appears in Batman 448, which is June 1990. And Batman takes him in, and Harold becomes basically the Bat Tinkerer. He's a brilliant inventor. Now, he's nonverbal, but he's a brilliant inventor. He fixes the Batmobile, he creates Bat Gadgets, and he becomes this silent support system for Batman for quite a long time, actually, and is there to help explain how Batman has all of these wonderful toys. Now, there is a dark turn for Harold at a certain point, and for those of you who read Batman Hush, where he is turned to the dark side sort of temporarily, or he's kind of used and abused and then does not emerge from that story, breathing. And so I like to remember Harold instead as the gentle support system for Batman, mm-hmm. who is, while nonverbal and judged to maybe be monstrous and less than by people who don't look beneath the surface, is in fact a brilliant man with many layers. So what about you? Do you remember Harold fondly?
Oh, yes. Harold was a character that I really enjoyed. I really enjoyed, you know, him. As you said, he was nonverbal. I enjoyed seeing him in the Batcave, you know, doing his mechanical work or whatever he needed. But I wish he would have stayed around longer. It was just, there was a lot to this character, and he didn't really need to talk, and yeah, it was kind of sad that he took a turn there at the end, and I assume he's no longer with us, but who knows? Maybe Harold will make a return here.
Death metal hand wave. Harold could be back.
There you go. There you go.
So who's your first choice?
So my first one that I picked is Harvey Bullock.
Yeah.
And Harvey's always been a cop, a little rough around the edges, is a character that he may not agree with Batman, or most of the time he really has issues that Gordon is going to Batman, that sort of thing. But Harvey is definitely a character that I love seeing. There's actually one of the best issues that it was just a one and done. It was called Batman's Bullock's Law, and it's all about Harvey Bullock. It's a credible issue. Did you ever read that one?
On your recommendation, actually, only rather, you know, recently, and okay. I loved it.
Okay, yeah. It was great. All about Harvey Bullock. Harvey's been through a lot. At one time, he had to quit the force, and then 1 year later, he was invited back, and we saw him briefly lately as the fill-in commissioner, and, you know, he tolerates Batman, and... And just such a great character. I love seeing Bullock. How about yourself?
He is one of my all-time favorite characters, in large part because he was a major character in the book when I started collecting in the early 80s. Doug Mensch had a real soft spot for Bullock and definitely did a lot of development of him. And Gene Colan and Tom Mandrake were the artists on the book at the time. And they would do these amazing scenes where Bullock and Gordon would be like walking and talking to, you know, move the story forward. But instead of just having them be talking heads, they would have them like stop at a hot dog stand and Bullock would order like this giant mustard ketchup covered monstrosity. And while he's eating, all of it splashing on his shirt, and Gordon's like side eyeing him like, oh, you're disgusting. I mean, it was just so much fun because Bullock was this gross, you know, just pig of a man, but he was this good cop with a good heart. He reminds me of Sipowicz from NYPD Blue, if people remember that show. Mm-hmm. Real gruff, really, really tough, you know, seemingly hard to get to know. But is in fact, you know, has a heart of gold and is just a great cop.
And so he wasn't going to be somebody that could be turned to a dirty cop. He wasn't going to be a dirty cop. He's like Gordon's number one guy that he trusts.
Exactly. Yeah. And Batman trusts him too. And yeah. I love even that the last time we saw him, we talked about this on the show. He says to Batman, hey, I'm the commissioner. Get out of my crime scene before I arrest you. And Batman goes, you're not going to arrest me. And he goes, don't tell me what I'm not going to do. And he goes, you're not going to do it, Harvey. And it's so funny because they have this like playful banter and it just pisses Harvey off. So I love him.
Yeah, it's great. So who's your number two?
So my number two is another major support system for Batman. He, especially now in the Bat books, has an increased role because he's got all the Bat money. And it is Lucius Fox. Now, Lucius was the Wayne Enterprises top CEO, CFO, just ran Wayne Enterprises. He was first introduced in Batman 307 back in January of 1979. And he has been a stalwart of the Bat books ever since. He is the person that Batman goes to run in Wayne Enterprises, goes to hide money to support that he is Batman so that the government doesn't find out that he's using money for, you know, Batmobiles and all of this stuff. He is also, people forget, the impetus for the formation of Batman and the Outsiders because he goes on a trip to Markovia and he gets kidnapped and held hostage. The Justice League says, we can't intervene with another government. And Batman says, screw you, I'm taking my ball and going home. Forms the Outsiders, and then, you know, the rest is history. And then most recently, you know, he was injured during Joker War. He was given the Wayne fortune. Batman left it in his hands to hide it from the government, but also because he trusts Lucius. And then Lucius's son, Jace, became the next Batman in Future State. His daughter, Tam, was a romantic interest of Tim Drake in the Red Robin series. And their son, Luke, most famously, is Batwing. So the Fox family is almost Bat royalty. And so we can't talk about allies without talking about Lucius. Also, brilliantly depicted by Morgan Freeman in the Christopher Nolan Bat movies. What are your thoughts on Lucius Fox?
Oh, love Lucius Fox. He's a character that's been around for a long time. I love seeing him now that Batman's not in Wayne Enterprises network anymore. Lucius, I'm still glad we get to see Lucius, and we get to see Lucius's bodyguard, which has been pretty exciting. And
Cole Cash, the grifter.
Cole Cash, yes, the grifter. So that's kind of exciting to see. But I did like that story from the first issue there, of first couple issues of Batman and the Outsiders. That's such a great story. And Lucius, he's another one that, you know, for a long time you weren't so sure if he knew who Batman was, but now it's obvious he knows Batman's identity. But he's definitely a person that is at Batman's side. Now, we'll see what happens in the future. I'm not so sure how much he's going to be in the Bat books, since they're not, you know, I don't know what that relationship is going to be, but I hope something, you know, Tynan does something to bring him in and we get to see him more, because I really enjoy that character. So
me too. All right. So who's your number two?
My number two is Oracle, Barbara Gordon. And you say, that's not a civilian. Well, her role is Oracle. The first time she was Oracle from 1988 to 2011. Off the heels of The Killing Joke, Barbara Gordon became this kind of a hero that she had this computer network. She was able to see networks of the FBI, you know, NSA and Interpol, and able to hit up the CIA's mainframe and that sort of thing. She has this photographic memory, which has always been a good part of her character. I love that part of her character. But she is in Batman's ear, not just Batman. She's been in a lot of the Bat family's ears, but she actually started off in the Suicide Squad.
Mm-hmm.
And you didn't really know who she was at the beginning, because her first appearance was in Suicide Squad, the Ostrander version, number 23, just offering her services to Task Force X. And then it was revealed in later issues that it was Barbara Gordon, and then she came over into the Bat books. But it's, as we were talking about this issue, I really enjoy her being in the Bat books. And we can't forget, she started off in the Birds of Prey and the miniseries Black Canary Oracle that led into the Birds of Prey and that sort of thing. And it's just a character that I love. And as I said, I think I love her more as Oracle than Batgirl. It's just, that's a character that I missed, that they did away with when the New 52 started, because miraculously she was healed out of the wheelchair and she was Batgirl again. And now they did have a put in the story why she's not going to be Batgirl as much. But I love that they put her in the Oracle role. It's just outstanding. What is your thoughts about Oracle?
Yeah, I totally agree. She's amazing. And she is one of my all-time favorite characters as well. I also love her in the Oracle role. I think if you're not going to have her just be Oracle, then I think that they've come up with an elegant solution where she says, you know, I can be Batgirl when I want. I can be Oracle when I want. I like that she's saying, you know, right now technology has healed me, but I can't rely on it staying. So I'm going to maybe take it a little easy. I think that, you know, that's the best answer they could do. You know, I think a lot of us would prefer that she were still, you know, a representative of somebody in a wheelchair who's heroic, and that's, you know, great representation. But she's an awesome character. I love her. She's always been one of my favorites. And I don't think John Ostrander gets enough credit for having taken her from the killing joke and healing her to have her be Oracle and then go on to, I mean, she becomes a member of Grant Morrison's Justice League. She is a central part of the DC universe, you know, and is making her way back there. So great choice. We couldn't have done this list without her.
No, absolutely not. So what's your top pick?
So speaking of a person who we could not do this list without, I think our last two picks are pretty easy to predict. My choice is Alfred Pennyworth, who first appeared in Batman number 16 back in April 1943. Now, when Alfred is first introduced, chubbier Alfred, a little less fit Alfred. He is, I love the original Alfred. He cracks me up. He is just the butler, and he's the kind of bumbling butler for Dick and Bruce, and they have to protect their secret identities from him. Over the years, they expand Alfred's role. So in his first appearance, they're already Batman and Robin when he arrives. So Alfred doesn't have this sort of paternal role that he would get later. But over the years, with revamps, with Crisis, with, you know, multiple revisions, and I think brilliant revisions, in this case, Alfred becomes basically Bruce's de facto father, Dick Grayson's father, actually the father to the entire Bat family, and becomes the emotional core for the team. He is depicted in a number of different ways. You know, he is unbelievably caring and loving. He's the person who calls Bruce on his BS, which is awesome. He's also a very capable fighter and medic. He was in the British, basically, OSS, the Secret Service. He is so famous, in fact, that he has his own TV show, Pennyworth, and he's been played by unbelievable actors ranging from Michael Caine to Jeremy Irons in film and TV. My favorite version of Alfred is from actually one of my least favorite Batman media shows, which is Gotham. I didn't love that show. I thought it was okay. But Sean Pertwee was brilliant as a very rugged, physical Alfred, a very capable Alfred who would kick your butt if you looked at young Bruce Wayne sideways. So I really liked him. But he's the heart of the Bat universe for me. And that is being explored in real ways in Nightwing, in Tom Taylor and Bruno Rinaldo's Nightwing series that they just took over a couple issues ago. So we had to mention Alfred. What about you? What's your favorite version of Alfred, and maybe who's your favorite person to play him?
My favorite person to play him, well, I love Alfred. Alfred is a mainstay in the Bat universe, and he's gone right now, but he'll be back. He'll be back because it's hard to imagine, you know, a Batman without Alfred.
Yeah.
But I would have to say, out of all the actors that have played Alfred, it's probably the Dark Knight version. The, you know, Batman Begins, Dark Knight. Mm-hmm. That's probably my favorite. Michael Caine. That's probably my favorite, but the one from Gotham, Sean Pertwee.
Mm-hmm.
Was pretty excellent also. I did like the Alfred, but you have to have Alfred. I know I didn't love it when Alfred was murdered, and I know it was done for story reasons and that sort of thing, but I'm one of these that likes the mainstays around. I want Alfred back. It just doesn't feel natural without Alfred, so. But yeah, I love the character, love the way he interacts with all the characters in the Bat family, and can't wait till he's back.
Me too, and we know he's coming back. I mean, they flat out say it at the end of Dark Knight Death Metal. I like, though, that they've extended it this long, because that way it'll feel like a bigger deal when he returns. But so we couldn't do this list without Alfred. There's one other person we couldn't do this list without. Who's your first choice?
My first choice is James Gordon. Commissioner James Gordon, and he's been a mainstay in the Batman universe since Detective Comics 27, and their relationship over the years have grown to a point that it's hard to imagine Gotham and Batman without James Gordon as the commissioner. We got an excellent story in Year One where it delves into, you know, the beginnings of Commissioner Gordon's and Batman's relationship, and they get to the point where Batman actually calls him Jim.
Mm-hmm.
But he's one of my all-time favorite characters in the Batman books that deserve to be there for a long time, and I hope he eventually comes back as Commissioner. I can't foresee him being away forever. But I just wanted to point out a couple books that, you know, in stories that Commissioner Gordon had been in that are notable. And one is the Black Mirror story, where we see the son, James Gordon Jr., come back and is a psychopath. And Dick Grayson is actually Batman in that story. That's Scott Snyder and Jock. And there's another one. It's called Batman Gordon of Gotham by Dennis O'Neill and Chuck Dixon. It's the 90s, and it shows Gordon's detective skills. You get Bullock, you get Montoya. It's a great one. I don't know if everybody's read that one. And the last one that I really enjoyed, it's almost a must-read, is Batman Turning Points.
Yep.
That is, you know, they look at certain points in Batman and Gordon's career and kind of have a story that you hadn't heard in that point in time. And I really enjoyed that. I enjoy Gordon, and I enjoy Gordon's story here in The Joker. And I look forward to more. So what do you think about James Gordon?
Yeah, he's an all-time great character. I mean, he's Lois Lane, basically, for the Bat universe. And he is so well-developed and has so many good stories of his own over the years that he is now just an equivalently good character, right? I mean, he'll always be a supporting character in the Bat universe, but as we can see, he's important enough that he can carry his own book, which we're going to talk about in a minute. So yeah, I love Jim Gordon. I would recommend all the stories you recommended are great. I would also recommend Gordon's Law, which was a 1997 miniseries by Chuck Dixon and Klaus Janson. I would recommend the No Man's Land arc, which, you know, took over the Bat books for a year.
Yep.
And there's a, you know, a ton of issues in there. And people always say, oh, it's one of the great Batman stories of all time. I actually think it's one of the great Jim Gordon stories of all time. It's much more a Jim Gordon story than it is a Batman story, which you also pointed out for Batman Year One. And then this new Joker book, which is phenomenal. So yeah, he's amazing. My favorite person to play him, I mean, there's just been so many good ones, but I really loved Gary Oldman's version in the Christopher Nolan verse. So, you know, just a great character and deserving of all the attention he's getting.
Absolutely, absolutely. So there are our top three. What are your top threes? Let us know if there's somebody we missed, if Aunt Harriet was one of your picks. So, okay. We'll go ahead and head to our next book.
Come on, Robin. To the Batcave. We haven't one moment to lose.
All right. Our next book is Joker number 2, written by James Tynion IV, drawn by Guillaume March, colored by Arif Prianto, lettered by Tom Napolitano, and edited by Ben Abernathy. Now, in this issue, Jim Gordon reaches out to Batman to discuss the offer he was made by the mysterious Cressida Clark to find and kill the Joker. Gordon asks for Batman's help in the form of access to his computer and files, a direct line of communication, and Batman's team looking into Cressida while Jim hunts for the Joker in South America. Meanwhile, the Joker is in a resort for criminals and is readying for battle as numerous nefarious men and women are coming for him to take revenge for his seeming A-Day massacre. Now, the biggest shock of the issue, though, comes when Jim Gordon tells Batman and Oracle that he knows that Oracle is his daughter, Barbara. They have a deep talk, and they talk about the scars they bear from the Joker. And the issue ends when we learn that Cressida Clark is a member of the Court of Owls. So for the love of God, Bill, this issue is packed, packed, packed with goodness. And there are so many important things to cover. Let's start with a couple of pieces. The Jim Gordon Batman discussion, where he tells Batman about the offer and talks about what he'll need. What were your thoughts on that interaction, and what were your thoughts on his demanding of Batman that he gives his support?
I think he needed something. He couldn't just go off blind after the Joker. He needed some kind of support. He needed something. But I think going into it, he's like, I'm not going to tell Batman I'm going to kill the Joker, because he'd never go for it. Would never go for it. And for whatever reason, Batman isn't thinking that Gordon would kill the Joker. But here's the thing. I could see Gordon killing the Joker. Everything he's been through, from the Killing Joke to, you know, his son dying, his wife dying by the hands of the Joker, It makes perfect sense to me. It makes perfect sense. I love seeing, you know, that he went to Batman. They're like old friends. They've known each other for years. Batman seems to, you know, he's like, I think he's a little surprised, because he even asked him. He says, you want to do this? This is something you want to do? You want to chase after this criminal in this foreign country and that sort of thing? And, you know, I really enjoyed this scene. This must be one of the best scenes in the book. I like his little homemade, you know, bat signal. So that was kind of cool.
Well, and they have really cool banter in that moment, because Gordon says, took you long enough to get here. And Batman goes, you used to have a bat signal I could see across the bay, not a flashlight with a bat on it.
Yeah.
Like, it's just really funny. They talk, like you said, they talk like old friends, and it raises a question. And so at one point they're talking about, and Jim saying, you know, I'm going to follow the Joker. I'm going to need all these access to your computer. I'm going to need your phone number. I'm going to need all of these things. And Oracle is in Batman's ear and says, don't let him do this. He's going to run off and get himself killed. And, you know, don't let him do it. And Gordon basically figures out what's happening, and he says, "Are you sure you're not just worried about your old man, Barbara?" And he catches both of them off guard, and he has a little smirk. And I love this moment because he says, "I can't help but smile. I hear the gears turning in Batman's mind, trying to guess how long I've known. In another minute, he'll be asking himself what else I've put together." And there's a little later conversation with Jim and Barbara where she says, "What do you know?" And he says, "That's too much to unpack right now." So I ask you, does Jim Gordon know that Batman is Bruce Wayne?
Of course he does.
Yeah, I think so too.
Of course he does, but I don't want it revealed.
Mm-hmm.
I like that, you know, that he's saying without saying, but it's obvious. He's like, "Do you think I wouldn't recognize my daughter in the Batgirl costume as Oracle?" Her voice, even though it's probably her voice is distorted, that sort of thing. But yeah, he knows. He's a great detective.
Mm-hmm.
So I did love that. I love seeing that. That was very entertaining. This whole issue, at least the first story, is the whole thing from page to page was interesting to me. Because when you start out in here, you see a couple characters and you don't know who they are or mm-hmm. what they are. They all look like killers and that sort of thing. And I really enjoyed where they went, and I was surprised where they went in this. But one of my favorite things that is brought up is like the hideaway for villains when they're taking a break.
Yeah, it's such a cool idea.
Yeah, the millionaire hideaway in foreign countries that they can go and just chill out. And that's where the Joker apparently is.
It really is brilliant. I mean, it makes you ask the question that we never ask as comic book fans, because we're so used to suspension of disbelief that we don't apply reality, right? We don't think like, well, how come these guys never go to the bathroom? How come they don't, you know? And we don't, the deal is when you open the comic book, you're going in with some suspension of disbelief. And I love that Tynan says, "Hey, what do supervillains do on their days off? Like, what do they do when they're not mounting their great attacks on Gotham City?" And it just makes so much sense. And then the fact that it starts as a refuge for Nazi war criminals,
yeah,
in the 40s.
Crazy.
And then, oh my gosh. And then they turn it into, you know, for gangsters and then super criminals. Really, it's also Tynan calling his shot at like, hey, as a culture, we have this weird fascination with the Joker. We have this weird fetishization with the Joker. Let's not forget, he is scum. He is the grossest villain in the history of comics. And let's not idolize this dude, because that's a really dangerous and bad thing. And I like that. I like that he's calling that to attention and calling it to light, especially in light of the reaction to like the Joker movie. And, you know, and again, he's brilliant because we only get a small dose of the Joker in this book. And again, the Joker is the least interesting thing in a book that is phenomenally interesting. So he's still interesting, but he's the least interesting thing. And Tynan clearly knows that. And so he'll give you just enough for the people who paid for this comic because it's called Joker. But he knows the heart of this book is Jim Gordon and Jim Gordon's reactions to the different people in his life, which is brilliant. So I do want to address one thing.
Uh-huh.
There's a moment when Barbara says, like, "Dad, come see me now. We need to talk." And Jim goes to see her and she says, "How long have you known?" And he's like, "You know, don't worry about it." And they're talking and he tells her, "Hey, they want me to kill Joker." He didn't tell Batman that part, but he's not going to lie to his daughter. And she says, you didn't tell Batman because you're actually considering it. And I love it because he goes, "I'm not considering it." And he goes back and he says, "You know, when I close my eyes, I see the Joker torturing me. I see him shooting you. I see him torturing your brother to the point of his death." Now, that torturing your brother part happened in the last arc of the most recent Batgirl book. And something else happened in that arc, in the 50th issue of it, where Barbara and Jim are talking and he's raving against Batgirl. He's almost crazy in the last few issues of that book. He's a completely unlikable character. He comes off as an old man who has no compassion. The writer Cecil Castellucci is trying to basically make this really ham-fisted analogy that like Jim Gordon's the old man who watches Fox News and Barbara's the young or, you know, more liberal. And it's really poorly done. I don't like disparaging other books or disparaging mm-hmm. creators. And I liked that writer on Shade the Changing Girl a lot. That was a really very compelling book. But that Batgirl run is there's a reason they ended that book. It was unbelievably out of character. The way they treated Jim Gordon in that book was really bizarre and so out of character, as if to almost they either had to wave it away or something. And so I like that Tynan takes a second to address it in this book. And Barbara says, Dad, the last time we talked, you said you were going to capture Batgirl because you blamed her for James's death. And he's like, yeah, I was just angry and lashing out. Sorry. And I'm glad they hand wave it away, because that is one of the worst written issues I've ever read of a Bat book. And I don't want it to hold this brilliant book back. So I feel bad for disparaging another book. But it's really bad. And I'm glad they addressed it. Did you read that book at all?
I did not.
I don't recommend it.
I've read it off and on. I did not read number 50 or any parts of her last arc before the end of the book. So
there are a couple other moments we should talk about before we get to the backup. One is a group of men and women in masks, in Bane masks, injecting a very muscular woman with venom. And basically saying she's ready. They're in Santa Prisca. They say, do you know who your enemy is? She says, yes, the Joker. And she puts on the Bane mask. Now, we don't know who this is in story, but in previews and in interviews with Tynan, I don't know, do you know who they've said this is?
Yes.
Yeah, so it's the daughter of Bane. So what are your thoughts on that?
Well, Bane supposedly died at this A-Day, Arkham massacre. So it would make sense that... if he had a daughter, I don't know how much he's ever seen this daughter, but she's out for revenge, and, they did something a little different. These, the guys with the Bane mass, she doesn't have, like, this pack that he injects venom in. They, like, I don't even know how to describe it. They, like... inputted the venom in her system. Like, I don't know if she did dialysis and put the put the venom in that way or whatever, but she looks like she's gonna be the new Bane, because she puts on a Bane mask, and we have Bane that died, but I have a feeling that he might not be dead either.
Yeah, I'm thinking he's coming back, and I'm thinking it's going to be a really interesting story when he finds out his daughter has adopted his identity. I love the mythology they're building around Bane. Uh-huh. There's little Santa Prisca in Gotham City. Yep. One of the few bright spots in the next Batman future state was the Banalitos, which was really cool. And I like, She Bane, I don't know if they just call her Bane, but
right.
I think it's really cool that they're building this, and then it's just such a fun addition. And, we have this other group we get to peek in out of a crime family of, it seems like a family of assassins who are going to go after the Joker, because one of the leader's brother died in Arkham. And then the last page reveal that Cressida, the woman that makes the offer to Gordon, is part of the Court of Owls. What are your thoughts of bringing the Court of Owls in on this?
Oh, I loved it. I loved it. And, her family supposedly had done something to work her way out, and now she's back in. The ledgers are clean. I love the work Court of Owls, because you never know who's in the Court of Owls.
Yeah, I didn't see this coming at all.
I didn't see it coming or anything. And the backtrack in a minute, the one thing I wanted to mention about those group of assassins, Hopper County, Texas. It sounds like they're right out of Chainsaw, Texas. Chainsaw Massacre. Because
awesome.
He said their baby brother Billy was snatched by authorities some years back, and it looks like the house and everything.
That's awesome. I totally didn't even pick up on that. You're right. And the guy says, we're going to get the Joker, and then we're going to cut him up, and we're going to eat him.
Yes.
Oh, my God. I did not even realize they're doing a Texas Chainsaw Massacre pastiche. That's awesome.
And, the director on the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre, his last name was Hooper.
Oh, that's a good catch, Bill. That is amazing. Oh my. So in one issue, we get the revelation that James Gordon knows that Barbara is Oracle and probably knows that Bruce is Batman. We get a secret hideaway for villains when they're not scheming. We get the Court of Owls. We get She-Bane. And we get the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. I mean, there's just no This is the best book on the stands, and it shocks me to say that because I am not a fan of the Joker as a character. But I mean, this is another 10 out of 10. We said that for the last issue. I mean, would you agree? This is
I agree.
It's the best book on the stands. It's undeniably so
good. I
agree.
It's incredible. And the Court of Owls showing up. Holy cow.
Yeah. And in a lesser writer's hands, it would be too many villains, but Tynan's so good. And so.
So the thing is, the Court of Owls is hiring Jim Gordon.
Mm-hmm.
They're behind it.
Unbelievable.
I mean, Batman is going to look into this Cressida. He's not going to find anything. He's not going to find that she's in with the Court of Owls. Actually, I don't see him showing up too much more.
I don't either. Yeah.
So that is incredible. They're one of my favorite groups of villains ever since they were introduced. I love seeing, you know, this secret society of people that's been around forever and they have their identities. You don't see it here, but they had like kids and stuff previously.
Yeah.
So that's pretty exciting. I'm excited to see the next issue of this. So I can't wait.
Well, and it's so cool because if you think about it, this book has the dominant villains of the 2000s, the Court of Owls for Batman, the dominant villain of the 90s, Bane, and then the dominant villain of all time for Batman, the Joker. I mean, it's really Tynan saying, like, I'm bringing everybody to this party. This is how serious this book is. And the heart of the book is Jim Gordon. It's so good. It's so good. So, again, I'm putting out the call. If you are not picking up this book and you're not picking it up because you're like, too much Joker, I don't, you know, toxic masculinity, all of the stuff that comes with it. You are missing out on the best book on the stands, and this is going to go down, I think, as a classic story. So for the love of God, pick it up.
Absolutely.
Okay, so that takes us to the backup in this book, which is starring Punchline, who's Joker's – well, I wouldn't even call her a sidekick because the whole thing about Punchline is she is out to overcome him and overtake him. So it's written by Sam Johns and James Tynan IV. It's drawn by Mirka Andolfo. It's colored by Romulo Fajardo Jr., lettered by Ariana Mayer, and edited by Dave Wilgos. In this backup feature, Bluebird, a.k.a. Harper Row, super exciting to see her again, is sharing a tic-tac challenge with Leslie Tompkins, where people upload brief videos of their encounter with Punchline when she was just Alexis K, so before she took on that nom de guerre. We learn that Alexis was always off-kilter and had but one friend in high school and college, so Harper goes to visit him and sees his dark collection of Punchline memorabilia. Meanwhile, Punchline is stirring things up in prison, and the Royal Flush Gang, who runs the prison, doesn't appreciate her moving in on their territory. So they bring in a ringer, Orca the Killer Whale. So this is a short backup, Bill. We won't dwell too long on it, but what were your thoughts on the second part of the Punchline story?
I thought it was okay. It definitely doesn't feel like something that goes that well with the Joker story. I don't know. That's just... you get on such a high reading the main story, and then this is like, okay, it was okay. I mean, there wasn't enough really to get much of. We're getting a little background on Punchline, but we're really not going that much forward, in my opinion, with this. What did you think?
I liked it much, much better than the last backup in issue one. I thought the last backup in issue one just didn't do it for me.
Yeah.
And I loved the Punchline special. I thought it was a really ingenuitive, a really clever look at a modern villain who weaponizes social media on her side. It was just ingenious.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really excited that we were going to get more of that by Tynan and Johns. And the first issue disappointed me. Now, this I thought was much stronger because it cut back to social media. It cut back to what do the sort of youth of Gotham think of Punchline. Now, in the Punchline special, she had used podcasts and Twitter and TikTok and all of those things to get, you know, young people to sort of clamor for her release, even though they knew on some level she wasn't innocent. This time there's a more balanced view where they're interviewing people who knew her growing up,
right?
And they're like, oh, she was awful. She's always been awful. This isn't a sudden thing. She's always been bad. And that I liked getting to see, mm-hmm. you know, this isn't somebody who Joker just, you know, poisoned and took in and brainwashed. She was always going to be a supervillain. she's just using Joker to get to a higher ground. So that's my favorite thing about Punchline. I don't want Harley Quinn 2.0. No. I want Punchline to be her own thing. And I think that this is going further to establish it. And then I'm just excited to see Harper Row again. I really like Bluebird. Is she a character that you like?
Yeah, I enjoyed her scene in here and investigating. So that was fun. Like, it's so called, yes, Snyder College.
That is funny. So we don't need, you know, don't buy the book for the Punchline backup. It is good, but it's definitely, I mean, nothing's going to compare to how good the rest of the book is. But it does bring us to the end. Any last thing you'd want to say about the Joker book before we cut away?
Pick it up. Pick it up if you're not reading it.
And we didn't even talk about the art. Gillam March is amazing. This is a creepy looking book. There are a lot of hollowed out eye sockets in it, and it's really cool. So pick up the book.
So, absolutely. Okay, let's go ahead and head to our final book.
Tune in tomorrow. Same cat time, same cat channel.
Our final book today is Batman Catwoman number 4. It is written by Tom King, drawn by Clay Mann, colored by Tomu Morey, lettered by Clayton Cowles, and edited by Jamie S. Rich. This issue is titled Hark the Herald Angels Sing, and now that song is in your head. As we always do with this book, I am going to do the synopsis in tracks because this book takes place in three time periods. There's a past track, a present track, and a future track. In the past track, Selina confronts Bruce and confesses to him that she has learned that the Joker planted a bomb under a skating rink in Gotham, risking the lives of hundreds of innocents. She only gives him 20 minutes to get there and defuse it, which is not great. Later in the issue, Bruce confronts her. Now they're both dressed in costume at this time, which is not accidental. And she runs, telling him to chase her and hang her from a building and threaten her like he does all of his lovers, which is a very interesting line. In the present track, Andrea Beaumont, the Phantasm, has captured Selina and is going to trade her for the Joker, who is in Batman's possession. Andrea's heart isn't really in it, as Selina is allowed to just move freely around. It's not really about Selina at all. But Andrea shows Selina videos of her with her son, Adam, and then pictures of him dead, seemingly killed by the Joker. Selina swears that she and Bruce will learn the truth, that they won't stop until they find it. But Andrea says that all Bruce is really good at is forgiving. Another very interesting line. Now, the future track is very compelling because Helena Wayne, the Huntress, daughter of Bruce and Selina, is making the rounds of all of Gotham's surviving older villains. And she's trying to learn about her mother's relationship to the Joker. She suspects that her mother killed the Joker, which she did, but she's trying to dig into and get more data. What she learns is that Selina and the Joker were always closer than the other villains, and that Selina is actually following her around. She confronts the Penguin, and she basically says, I run this town. So, Bill, we have another issue of Batcat, three tracks intermingling again. I think King and Mann are hitting their groove in when they're picking their needle cuts, their needle drops for time jumps. I'm really into it. I'm even able to sort of predict when they're going to happen. But I'm curious, which of the tracks for this issue was most interesting to you or most frustrating?
The most interesting would be the future track, which seems to be an ongoing thing. I love seeing, you know, we're going to the old villains.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was cool. We got Mr. Zazz, we got Clayface, the ventriloquist and Scarface, and the ventriloquist look like he's drooling a little bit. But yeah, I love seeing the old villains and Mr. Freeze and Mrs. Freeze, you know. Their roles seem to be reversed. I love seeing that. And I love the interaction with the Penguin. And he's like, you're ruining my Christmas festivities. But I love that. I love the scene. The stuff with the Phantasm, it doesn't seem like it's going forward that much. Maybe this issue, you get into a little bit of, you know, her son dying and how she feels about that and how she feels about the Joker and that sort of thing. But the past track where Selina, you know, doesn't tell Bruce right away that the Joker has a bomb, mm-hmm. you know, in the ice skating rink, that confuses me a little bit. I know they're trying to establish, like, the Joker and her had some kind of relationship that nobody else had, but I'm a little confused about that particular one.
See, I love that because I think what it's illustrating is that she wasn't a good guy. Batman has tried to convince himself that she was never one of the villains the way, say, Joker or Penguin were. But that's not true. And I think that's what King is trying to say, that she really was one of the villains. And, you know, he may have been physically attracted to her and romantically interested in her, but it doesn't make her any less of a criminal than, say, the Penguin. Now, no one's the Joker. I mean, she wasn't a psychotic murderer, but how is she any different than the Penguin? I mean, she was effectively a crime boss in her own way. And so I like that a lot. And I like the fact that she's a good enough person that she says to him, there's a bomb under the rink, you have to stop it. But she's a bad enough person that she doesn't tell him until there's only a little bit of time left, so that he has to run and can't really confront her in the moment. Now, later in the issue, when he confronts her, there is a 2-page spread of her on the basically the roof of a building, maybe Wayne Manor, and he's there too. That is perhaps the most gorgeous Catwoman drawing of all time. I mean, Clayman is just killing it in this book. The art is phenomenal. And I love that line she says. There are a couple lines in this book that kill me. When she says to him, what do you want from me? What the F do you want from me? And she says, screw you. You need to know where he is, meaning the Joker. Come and get me and beat me and hang me and threaten me. Scare me to death and tell me how low I am and how high you are, like you do all your other lovers. And I thought that was fascinating because she's basically saying to him, the only relationship you're in is with your villains. And basically it's abusive. So I found that fascinating. And then I love the line in the past track where Andrea Beaumont says to Selina, you know, what are you going to do? Capture the Joker? He'll just escape again. You know, she says the only thing Bruce is good at is forgiving. You should know that better than anyone. So there are just some brutal insights into their characters in this book. And I love it. I really do. Now, I think the big failing of this book so far, and this is not a failure. I'm loving this book. I think it's going to be a classic Batman story. But if there is a failing, and you nailed it, why use the Phantasm? Why use Andrea Beaumont if you're only going to pay this little attention to her? I think it's like Chekhov's gun, right? Like you've got a gun on the mantle, mm-hmm. and then you're going to fire it into the air. If you break out the Andrea Beaumont, you better use her. There's too much story there. There's too much feeling there. There's too much affection there. So in my mind, we're a quarter of the way through this mini. If the Phantasm doesn't become a dominant character moving forward, then I will look back and say that's the place where this mini failed and you know, succeeded in every other way, but that's where it failed. So do you agree?
Yeah, I think there should be more Phantasm. I am not in the same place you are about this book.
Yeah.
I still have a rough time at jumping back and forth and that sort of thing. But I want to see more of the Phantasm. That's what I do like, the interactions, you know, with Selina and in the future track. I'm yearning for more Phantasm, to know more about that. And, you know, why some of this is interesting, the way it's written, meaning the way it jumps around, it still feels kind of off to me. Mm-hmm. I'll read it. I'll continue reading it. It's just, I'm curious. What are we, a quarter of the way in?
Yeah.
I hope at some point it does pick up the story, you know, and maybe even expands the story with the Phantasm. Because we're not getting a lot of characterization. We're not getting a lot of a story as far as that goes. And I know the title is Batman Catwoman, so... But since, as you said, since they put her in here, I'd like to see more from her.
Yeah, they made the choice. They made the choice to use a beloved character from the best Batman movie ever made, and who has not been in the in-continuity comic books. And they announced it, and they made it a big deal. And so they owe it to the readers to make it a big deal in the book. And I can see why people are frustrated. I think I've said this all along. I have a soft spot for Tom King. His writing style sings for me. So I think I forgive a lot of his sins in ways that others don't, which I totally understand. And I can see why this book is frustrating for many. I do hope that they build in a little more narrative clarity moving forward. But I love Helena. I think she's a really interesting, I don't even know, she, you know, the Huntress thing, she's a really interesting character. Like, she apologizes for interrupting the Penguin, and he's like, "Bat, people don't apologize. What are you doing?" And I like that she's different than her mom and dad. So there's a lot that's been really great in this book. But until that Andrea Beaumont issue gets addressed, because you can't assume that your readers have seen Mask of the Phantasm. That movie is, well, I mean, how old is that movie at this point? 28 years old? You know, yeah, 27 like years old? You can't assume your readers know it, so you better give us some Andrea Beaumont if we're supposed to care. And that, for me, is the gaping hole in the middle of this mini that if they address, I will love forever. If they don't, it'll always be the Achilles heel of this story. But brings us to the end of it. Any final thoughts on Batcat?
No, not really.
Let me ask you a brutally honest question. If I weren't pushing for it, would you be covering this book?
No.
Okay. That's fair. It's fair.
But I don't hate it.
Damning with faint praise. It's not the worst comic ever.
I mean, I'm still going to pick it up, so it's not like...
Yeah.
It's not like Batman Ra's al Ghul mini.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's out.
Yeah.
It's not like that.
Yeah.
But I want to really like it. I mean, it's beautiful. It's stunning. Ugh, the art is
so
stunning.
Good, yeah.
It's just, I don't know. Maybe by the end I'll say, hey, you were right. They nailed this one. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, we will. And I'll end up loving it either way. I feel a little bad, especially because the rest of the Bat line is so great. And then, like, mm-hmm. even Batman Detective came out by Tom Taylor and Andy Kubert, and that was phenomenal. So there's so much good. I feel bad having you cover something you don't love, but I am hoping you will come to love it at some point. So, all right. So that brings us to the end of Batman Catwoman. We'll have another issue somewhat soon, but we'll see if it picks up steam for you.
Okay, there you go. So we'll go ahead and start to get out of here.
I am vengeance. I am the night. I am Batman.
But before we leave, we want to do what we learned. And Sean, tell everybody what you learned in this episode.
I learned that Stabbo is not a great supervillain name. You can be Jaro, you can be Starro, but you can't be Stabbo. So that's my big lesson. That's my big takeaway. What about you?
Well, I learned that if you were having some rest and relaxation, you know, on your plane as it's cruising around, that you always have time to bake a turkey.
Is that code? Is that a euphemism? Oh, it's so good. The Ghostmaker backup was so good. It made my entire week. Oh, God, Bill, the Bat books are so diverse right now.
Yeah,
and amazing.
So we'll get into some Detective next time.
Some Nightwing.
Nightwing, yes. That's been good. Okay. Until next time. Same Bat time. Same Bat channel. We will see you later.